Tommy Heinsohn gets fired, Larry Bird gets drafted, and the Celtics almost become the Clippers? Yeah, it all happened in the late 70s, and we're wrapping it up here on the Friday Lockdown Celtics. Millie's Let's Go! Rainy J's back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. Ooh. This is the truth like 34. Yeah. It's like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly. John Corrales here of MassLive.com. I want to thank you for sticking with the Locked On Celtics podcast through this hiatus, through this insane time. I say it every show, but I really mean it every time. It's a wild time out there. You've got a lot on your mind. A lot has changed in your life. And if you're still listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast, I really appreciate it. And it really means a lot that you still take the time to do so. So, we're going to wrap up our 70s. Well, I shouldn't say that because I think next week I've got a special treat for you. But as far as me and Mike Dinan of RedsArmy.com is concerned, we're wrapping up our discussion of the 70s. I think there's one more thing that I'm going to give you from the 70s on Monday. So until I know that for sure, wait for me to tweet it. But I've got a good feeling about this. So Monday's show is going to be fun. In the meantime, we wrap up the discussion with the Boston Celtics missing the playoffs again. Tommy Heinsohn gets fired, like I said, in the cold open. Larry Bird comes along. Cedric Maxwell comes along. And the wildest trade in Boston Celtics history didn't involve players on the floor. It involved the owners swapping franchises. And it almost became the Celtics moving to San Diego to become the Clippers. So all of that's coming up right now here as we continue the discussion with Mike Dinan of RedsArmy.com.
Yeah, you mentioned that they were 32-50. They missed the playoffs at 1977-78 season. But that team, to me, was more dysfunctional than the Kyrie Celtics.
Whoa.
With Tommy being fired, Satch came in as the coach. He had coached at Harvard, but he really, I didn't think, was a good choice to coach an NBA team. Anyway, they added Cedric Maxwell in the draft. He was the 12th pick. He went to University of North Carolina at Charlotte, not the University of North Carolina that you see on TV all the time now. This was another division of the state university system. And he put them on the map basketball-wise by leading them to the Final Four in his senior year. So people knew who he was. And Max was a great acquisition because he played 8 seasons in Boston. And his impact, he was the finals MVP. He had 24 points in Game 7, the clutch performance in 1984 in the finals. He led the league in field goal percentage twice. And then when they traded him, they got Bill Walton, who ended up helping the Celtics win in 86. Mm-hmm. And then Max is retired in the rafters, number 31.
Yep.
So that was one good thing that happened in 78. They picked up Dave Bing for the final season of his career. Dave Bing was a former All-Star. He had led the league in scoring, and he played backup guard for this Celtics team. At midseason, they traded Charlie Scott to the Lakers, and they got back Don Chaney and Kermit Washington. Now, Kermit Washington was suspended at the time. If you don't know who Kermit Washington is, go to YouTube and search for him. him and Rudy Tomjanovich, Rudy T. There was a incident in a game where Kermit Washington punched Rudy Tomjanovich and literally nearly almost killed him.
Almost, yes. Yes.
He hit Rudy. It was, you have to see it to understand. There was a fight. Rudy came over to try to break it up. He was a player for Houston. And Kermit Washington wheeled around, threw a punch before he knew really what was happening, and hit Rudy Tomjanovich square, and he went down. He needed surgery. He was really in jeopardy for a while. And Kermit Washington got suspended for, I'm not sure how many games, 30 games, something like that. So Red saw an opportunity to get, because Kermit was an outstanding rebounder and defender at forward. So Red grabbed him. And when he was done with his suspension, he was an effective player for the Celtics. So these are some of the good things that happened. But there was so much bad. JoJo White, who was an Iron Man of sorts, he had played almost 500 consecutive games. He developed bone spurs on his heels. These were legitimate bone spurs, not like some other ones we've heard about. But he ended up needing surgery, so he missed the last part of the season. That year was the blizzard of 78 and other bad weather in the winter. There were so many postponements of games that the Celtics had to finish the season by playing four games in the final 4 days. And John Havlicek retired. He was still an effective player. He could have still probably played because he never got tired and he still had the energy. He could still shoot. But I think he saw where things were going also, and he decided to hang it up. And I went to his final game, which was like 2.5 hours of weeping and cheering. It was quite a day. He went out with a win, which you couldn't take for granted that year, but he scored 29 points, had 5 rebounds and 9 assists in his final game, played 41 minutes. And it was unforgettable. He got an 8-minute standing ovation before the game when he was introduced. Then he made a speech at halftime. He was bowing to the crowd. And then the second half, he played just about every minute and hit his last shot, and they won going away. It was quite a day, but very emotional. Now, there's a thing about Ernie DiGregorio, who was with the Celtics then. Ernie D had played for Buffalo. He's a Rhode Island boy.
Oh, I know Ernie D, baby.
He's a legend here in Rhode Island, where I live. And
where I'm from.
Yeah. And he led the league in assists as a rookie. He was a great passer. And now there's sort of an urban legend that Ernie D spent that whole final game getting the ball to Havlicek. Well, he did, but he only had 3 assists that day. He didn't really do as much as the legend says that he did. He wasn't even in there at the end of the game. So I don't want to burst any bubbles, but that was the fact. He had 3 assists. Maybe I shouldn't have even bothered bringing that up, but just to set the record straight. But that was the end of Havlicek's career. And you could just see that things weren't going to get any better for the Celtics for a while.
Man, you bring up Ernie DiGregorio. That's he was actually a coach and at was it North Providence High School when I was playing in high school. I played against an Ernie DiGregorio team, which is fun because I'm sitting there playing, and I'm like looking at Ernie D. I'm like, oh my God, that's Ernie D. So
he was just an ordinary looking guy. If you didn't know who he was, you might, you wouldn't think he was any kind of a star basketball player. He was just average height and, but he was a wizard with the ball.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
So Havlicek's gone. The 1978 is also notable for one of Red Auerbach's master strokes. After all of this stuff, after, the turmoil, the 78 is, like you said, one of the worst or one of the wildest years.
Wildest, yeah. I mean, we've only gotten through like one third of all the stuff that happened in that calendar year. There's still two big, big things to come.
The one big thing is the drafting of Larry Bird that happened. Did you have something that happened before the drafting of Larry Bird?
No, that was the next thing. Yeah. And I have a story about that, too.
Awesome. Well, that's why you're here. So on June 9th, the Celtics draft Larry Bird. And what's notable about them drafting Larry Bird is really a year before he was going to come out. He'd obviously been a star at Indiana State. He had big rivalry with Magic Johnson. We knew that he was, this big rising star in college, but he was still in college, still playing. He didn't come out early. He was drafted by the Celtics. That whole title run, that loss in the title game to Magic and the Michigan State team, that he was still property of the Boston Celtics at that point. So go ahead, Mike. I'd love to hear your story.
Yeah, it was kind of weird the way that went. I felt like for the first time I had a real interest in college ball. I mean, I used to watch games and all, would watch the tournament and such, but now I felt like, wow, I really have a guy to root for here, and that, them making the final game, the Indiana State team, it was quite an experience going along with that. And, the whole thing with Bird and the draft, he wasn't going to come out, as you said. So the Celtics had to sign him before the next draft, a year later. He wasn't going to sign while he was still playing in college, obviously. So it was going to come down to just a couple of months' time where they were going to have to work out a contract with Bird and his agent. And back to the draft, some teams didn't want to go through that risk because you could take him. And then if you didn't sign him, you would lose him. He'd be draftable again. So he didn't go until the sixth pick, even though he was the college player of the year. And anyway, my personal story about this is that I went to that draft by sneaking in, posing as a reporter. I was working then in New York, where I grew up. I still was living down there. And the draft was in a hotel ballroom in New York, not like it is today, not even close. I mean, today, for the past how many years, they've had it in an arena. They have fans there. It's on TV. There's hoopla, obviously. There was none of that back then. Nobody knew anything about what was happening except the people in that room. Well, I work with a guy named Neil Shalen. Neil's brother, by the way, is Mike Shalen, who was a reporter in New York City. He worked for the Boston Herald. Now he is with the Union Leader in Manchester, New Hampshire. Anyway, Neil was a huge basketball fan. And we were talking, and we said, you know, the draft is there today. I wonder if we could go up to this hotel, which wasn't far from where we worked, and maybe get in. So we hatched this plan where we would go. He brought his notebook. I brought a camera. And we said we were from some mythical pro basketball publication. I forget what we called it, the Basketball Times, something like that. We made up a story. Nobody asked us for an ID. We didn't have a media pass or anything like that. It was 1978. Nobody cared about security back then. So we got in. And there were a bunch of players there, all the ones that were going to be the top picks. Michael Thompson, Phil Ford, Rick Roby, a couple others. Bird was not there. But, you know, there was no nothing like there is today, mm-hmm. clearly. You know, like with the pre-draft mock drafts and all the scouting reports and everything, there was nothing like that. So I didn't know what to expect, but I knew who Larry Bird was. And I'm standing there, and they would announce the picks and put the name on a board. And it came time for the Celtics. They were picking sixth because they had been terrible. And they announced that they took Larry Bird. And so I think that I was the first Celtics fan to know that the Celtics had drafted Larry Bird. And that may or may not be true, but that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
You got stories for everything, man. This is amazing. I didn't even know that. So, okay, so the Celtics draft Larry Bird. This is a big deal, obviously. But Larry Bird's first game technically comes in the 70s. So, you know, his first season is the 79-80 season. So that'll be the beginning of the next week's podcast. But so the Celtics take this risk. They go ahead and they draft Larry Bird, and it works out. Then this weird thing that I can't even begin to comprehend happening nowadays. Basically, the Celtics and the Buffalo Braves trade for each other. And it's the Braves owner, John Brown, is approached by Boston Celtics owner, Irv Levin. And Irv Levin he's a California guy. He's a Hollywood guy. He wants to move the Boston Celtics to California, which is blasphemy. The Boston Celtics moving from Boston would just be the horror of sports horrors. So, but he doesn't want to stay. So he calls up the owner of the Buffalo Braves, says, do you want to swap franchises? They do. They execute this trade that Red Auerbach says he knew nothing about, that sends Kermit Washington, Sidney Wicks, Freeman Williams, Kevin Kunert to what becomes San Diego. They get Tiny Archibald, Marvin Barnes, Billy Knight, and a pick that becomes ultimately Danny Ainge. So it works out. But basically, the Boston Celtics owner trades franchises with the Buffalo Braves owner, and then he takes the Buffalo Braves and moves them to San Diego, and that gives birth to the to the LA Clippers. So if you didn't know that the Celtics and the Clippers are connected like that, now you know.
Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram.
Yeah, that was another insane thing to have happen. That's the second of the two things that I said that was still to come. And, you know, one of the offshoots of this, Red didn't know about this. This all was done without his involvement. John Y. Brown, the new owner of the Celtics, he was flamboyant. He was rich. He was unpredictable. He was, well, yeah, you get the idea.
Yes.
But, you know, Red was used to being in charge, and he didn't like having things done without his knowledge. I mean, that stands to reason anyway, whether Red was used to being in charge or not. I mean, he was the executive with the Celtics. He figured he at least deserved a heads up. And so this made him think about what is it going to be like to work with this guy. So he, Red, actually thought about leaving. And he was offered a contract by the Knicks to run their franchise. So now imagine Red Auerbach leaving the Celtics and going to New York. He's from Brooklyn, but
right. You
can't picture him running the Knicks.
No.
But it almost happened. He was really thinking about it. And the reason he didn't accept it was first his wife, and then literally Celtic fans on the street, once this got out, were talking to him and saying, you can't leave. You know, we can't do this without you. We got to have you here. You are the Celtics. And so he obviously ended up staying. And, you know, it could have been pretty bad.
Could have been. Very much could have been.
Yeah.
So the ownership group there, it was John, like you said, John Y. Brown, and then he turns around and sells it to Harry Mangurian, and that ends up being the finale. Like, so when Brown trades franchises, they make that trade. It's an unpopular trade at the time. Red Auerbach is pissed off because no one told him about it, and the Celtics fans riot to a point where the guy sells the team. And that brings us to 1979 when that happened, and the Celtics go 29-53. This is the, you know, Chris Ford, Rick Roby, Cedric Maxwell, Tiny Archibald. Archibald is here after blowing out. Tiny Archibald was an amazing player. But he had blown out an Achilles, I believe. And by the time he got to Boston was kind of like, I don't want to say a shell of himself. He ended up making all-star teams as a Celtic, which goes into the 80s. But, it was the beginning of that next era of the franchise. At that point, Max is really just kind of starting out. And the Celtics are struggling to get back to prominence. But again, that 79-80 season, Bird comes in. The last notable thing that I'll say from 1979, another little bit of history. The NBA institutes its three-point line. And the first person to hit an NBA three-pointer is Chris Ford, future coach of the Boston Celtics. But Chris Ford, in a game in October of 1979, the season opener, actually hits the first three-pointer in NBA history.
Yes, and that happened to be Larry Bird's first game.
So,
as well.
Yes, it was.
That was the next season. You had a few things before we move on from the final year of the 70s. there were a few things that happened in that 78-79 season that had an impact on the next generation of Celtics. Besides the franchise swap, that season the Celtics won only 29 games and finished in last place. It was their worst season to that point. The worst season until ML Carr came along as the coach. Anyway, they were terrible. They started 2-12. Sad Sanders got fired, and then Dave Cowens, as you mentioned, became player coach. The final one ever in the NBA. There hasn't been one since. Then while he was still here, John Y. Brown made another big trade and again didn't tell Red. He traded 3 first round draft picks that Red had accumulated to the Knicks for Bob McAdoo, who had led the NBA in scoring 3 times, but he wasn't a good fit with the Celtics and he didn't want to be in Boston anyway. He ended up playing like 20 games for the Celtics. And, but, you know, Red had these 3 draft picks and now they were gone. So he had to do something to make lemonade out of lemons. And he managed to pull it off. He, Red traded McAdoo, to Detroit. The Celtics, this is after the season now. The Celtics had signed ML Carr as a free agent from Detroit. And back then, if you signed a team's free agent, you had to give them some compensation. So they arranged to have a trade as compensation. The trade was to send McAdoo and then get back 2 first rounders from Detroit. Well, those were the picks that were eventually used to obtain Parrish and McHale. So, and then you added Larry Bird at, after the season. So right there, you had the new big 3. And there were some other changes that happened during that 78-79 season. The Celtics traded Earl Tatum to Detroit for Chris Ford, who you mentioned. They got Rick Roby. Rick Roby had been the second or third, I think, draft pick the year that Bird was drafted. He went to Indiana in that draft, and he was only there half a year. And then they traded him to the Celtics. And JoJo White, who was 32 at that time, coming off that surgery, he got traded away to Golden State, and that was kind of sad because JoJo should have been a career life Celtic. And then at the end of the year, after 29 wins, Cowens was replaced by Bill Fitch as the coach. And Bill Fitch helped turn things around.
That's
the
big,
following
that's
year
a big
when
one.
They went into the 80s.
That's a big
that
one.
Is a big one.
Larry Bird loves Bill Fitch. Loves him. That combination was fantastic for the Celtics. Obviously, we know how that went, but that kind of partnership was important for the Celtics after having had like the turmoil there, the head coach. A lot of things settle down as we look forward to 1980 and moving on. A lot of things start to settle down until another ownership change and all of that, but that's another story for next week. But the hiring of Bill Fitch is huge, and it starts an immediate turnaround for the Boston Celtics. That's the 70s. What else do you have? Is there any other story you want to tell about the 1970s? This is, like I said before, this is your era. So.
Well, it is the decade that I really became fully immersed in the Celtics. I used to, before I moved to Rhode Island, I used to listen to the games on the radio, so I got to know Johnny Most real well. But I have one more story I can share. I met Tommy
when he
was not the coach after he had been fired. Okay. Before he came back to work with the team as a broadcaster, Tommy was big in the insurance industry. That was his second career during the era where these guys needed to work in the off season. And I worked for MetLife, and we had a sales conference at a hotel called the Seacrest on the Cape, Cape Cod, for those who don't live around here. Tommy was signed up to be a guest speaker to talk to our sales reps. So he came to Seacrest, and I worked on the staff that organized the conferences. I wasn't a salesperson. I was behind the scenes. And so I got to meet Tommy. But I was there at the meeting when he was giving his presentation. And he gave his speech. Everybody loved it. And, you know, handshakes all around and everything. Now he's done. He leaves. Now my boss, who was kind of a fiery kind of a person, had a temper, he starts telling a story about Tommy from his book. He had written a book. It was a story about Bill Russell, and when they would play one-on-one after practice, there was one guy who he never could beat. Now, Bill Russell always won, but he couldn't beat this one guy. Does anybody know who that one guy was? Well, nobody was going to know, but I read the book. So I knew. And of course, I had to show what a great Celtics fan I was. Sure. So I raised my hand and I piped up. That was Larry Siegfried. Tony looks at me like, what? You knew that? You know? Yeah. He was thrown off. Tony was so thrown off that he lost his point, didn't know what to say. And did I get reamed out afterward? So Tommy got me in trouble at work. Thanks, Tommy.
That's amazing. Man, that's good shit, man. This is good stuff. So, all right. So that's the 70s. I'm just an era that a lot of people don't know much about. We now will enter into the 80s. What a decade that is. So that's all next week. Be sure to stick around for all of that. Now we're getting into more modern history. We're starting to get to, this is my era of Boston Celtics basketball. This is where I really started to take an interest. And it's the 80s is a just monumental turnaround for the NBA. And it starts with Larry Bird, starts with Magic Johnson. Those guys, that rivalry, the Boston Celtics, LA Lakers rivalry, which becomes an actual rivalry. It becomes something. It was very much Yankees Red Sox. In this example, the Celtics are the Yankees. But for a while, it was just the Celtics beating up on the Lakers. And finally, in the 1980s, the Lakers get their first finals win over the Boston Celtics, and it's part of a resurgence for the NBA. It's part of the Celtics returning to glory. Obviously, you got the big three, Larry, Kevin, and Robert Parrish. There's some interesting stories there. Red Auerbach pulls out another gem of a trade to construct that big three. It's an era that is also marred with tragedy, as we know, and it really, there's a turning point here where it's one of two major turning points in NBA and in Celtics history that really derailed Boston. And as we get into the 90s in a couple of weeks, that really sets the tone. What happens in the 80s here starts to set the tone for the worst decade in Celtics history in the 1990s. So that's all coming up as we get closer and closer to modern day Boston Celtics. So subscribe, please, if you are still interested in getting this history lesson. I'm going to try and make next week a little extra special as we continue our discussion and get into the 80s. So please subscribe, share the podcast, tell everybody what's going on here. And I hope you have enjoyed this Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.